We are starting here with the Mishnah on Pehe Amud Aleph. This is a Mishnah that we've quoted earlier in the Masechta in order to explain reasons why Menachot can come from certain locations. And that is, Ein Mivin, Lo Mi Beit HaZbalim, Lo Mi Beit HaShlachim, Lo Mi Beit HaIlan. One cannot bring produce, wheat, used for the Omer, for the Shtei Lechem, from these types of fields. One is Beit HaZbalim, a field that requires fertilizing. Lo Mi Beit HaShlachim, a field that requires watering, meaning that rain water is not sufficient to it. Velo Beit HaIlan, which is a field in which trees are growing, because they cause the wheat to grow in a subpar way. They weaken the wheat. It doesn't. They take away from the nutrition or the nutrients that are in the ground, and therefore the wheat does not grow as strong or as well in those fields. So either Beit HaZbalim is either for the same reason, the fact that it has to be fertilized means that the wheat is not going to grow as strong or as well, or it's the fact that it's ma'us. It's disgusting to bring it from there. And Beit HaShlachim will be the same idea, that it's not as good as a Beit HaBal, as a field that is watered by the rainwater rather than watered either through irrigation, pools, or hand watering. All of these types of fields, we don't want to bring the Omer or the Shtei Lechem from there. V'im hevi, kasher. On the other hand, if you do bring it from these fields, it's kasher. V'di'eved, these fields suffice. Ketzad hu oseh, how do you do the Omer or the Shtei Lechem properly? Neira shana rishona, they plow it and leave it empty in the first year. U'v'shana shnia zora, in the second year they plant it. Kodom lo Pesach 70 yom, 70 days before Pesach. Vu oseh solet miruba, and that makes a lot of solet. And that's the way to maximize it, is to plow it, leave it fallow for that year. Plant it in the second year, 70 days before Pesach, and that'll give you the bounty that you want. Ketzad bodega gizbar, so that is the gizbar check that he's got good solet. Machnis yado l'tocho, or tocha, puts his hand inside the solet that you produced. Ala ba'avach, when he pulls his hand out, if there's dust on his hand, psula ad yinefena, then you have to go back, or ad yinefa, you have to go back and re-sift it until there is no longer any dust when he puts his hand in. Vimit lia psula, and if it rots, if it goes bad, it rots, then it is also psula. Now, ketzad oseh, Gemara wants to understand this. Nira shena rishona, he leaves it, he plows it and leaves it fallow in the first year. What does the Mishnah mean over here? Does it mean Nira Shana Rishona, Ushnia Nira Vizora? The first year he goes ahead and he plows it and leaves it fallow. Second year he plows it and then plants it. Meaning that there's two times. You plow it both years, it just you only plant it in the second year. Oh. Dilma Nira Shana Rishona, Ushnia Zora below Nira. You plow it the first year, leave it fallow. The second year you do not plow it at all, you just plant based on the plowing from the first year. And there is no plowing in the second year. So Gemara says, Tashma, Titanya Weba Brighter, Yosium, Yosi Afchite, Karzaim, Vikvar Achim. These two locations would have been great for bringing the wheat from, whether it's the Sorim or the wheat for the Omer or the Shtei Lechem. These would have been wonderful locations. Ilmalei Smuchot, the Yerushalayim. Had they been close to Yerushalayim, meaning had they been, it should be Ilmalei with a Yud, not Ilmalei with an Aleph, but had they been close to Yerushalayim, they would have been the perfect types of places to bring. Ayu Mivin Mehem, they would have brought for them. Lefish Ein, Mivim et Omer Elamina Sadot, Hamudramot. You can only bring it from fields that are Mudramot. We'll see in a second what that means. Veha Menun Narot. Lekach. Because on them the sun shines, it rises and sets, and that those are the perfect types of fields. Rashi claims that a mudramot comes word from Darom, that they are southern fields, which make a lot of sense. We're in the northern hemisphere over here. Southern fields will get the maximum amount of sunlight. So that's what Rashi says. They are on the southern side. And then ha menuna rot is from the word near, those that are plowed frequently. Fields that are plowed frequently, as well as fields that face the southern side, so they get the maximum amount of sun. Tosfos says that he thinks mudramot does not necessarily have to be that they are southern, but rather mishupaot, let's add their own. They have to be on an incline. It doesn't matter which side of Yerushalayim. So he claims that Rashi is saying that they have to be south of Yerushalayim. They're south of Yerushalayim. Or Tosfos is saying they have to be southern facing field. It doesn't matter which direction from Yerushalayim, as long as they are southern facing fields. Because on those areas, the sun shines a lot. Now why? Il Malay, had they been close to Yerushalayim, would have been good. Why does close to Yerushalayim help you? It's one of two reasons. mountains, either because Yerushalayim is harim savim la, and since they're up in the mountains, the sun has more penetration, they have more exposure to the sun in terms of the crops, so there are better crops over there, or because ein mavirin ala mitzvot, that you can't pass by the mitzvot. So had these places been close to Yerushalayim, it would have been a big bring from them, but since they're further away, they're not useful in terms of bringing. So they're examples of places that would have been great had they just been closer to Yerushalayim. Now, what do you do? Plow it in the first year. The second year, you also plow it again. And then you repeat it and plant before Pesach, 70 days before Pesach, like our Mishnah says, so it'll be close to the sun. It makes a stalk that is a zeret long. And shibolet, and its beard, its part where it holds the kernels, that's zartayim, it's two zeret long. Then you cut it down. Umeamer, you pile them up. Vidash, and you crush them. Vizore, you throw them up, you winnow them to the wind so that you get rid of the chaff. Uborer, then you do borer to take out the kernels. Vitochain, then you mill them. Umirake, then you sift them. Meviyetzel gizbar, you bring it to the treasurer. Vikizbar machnis yedolo tocha, puts his hand in him. Elta ba'avak, dust comes off on his hand. Amalo chazor v'napel uta shnia, go back and do another series of sifting. He puts oil on his hand. This was not a test, but rather a cleansing process. He used to put the oil on his hand, he'd stick it in, and the oil would pull out all the dust. That's how he'd clear it of all the extra dust that's in there by putting oil on his hand. So out of this long, long braita, we got what we wanted, which was Choresh Vishoneh. He plows, and he plows again. So now, what's interesting here in the Braita suggests that it's Nira. The first year, he plows and leaves it fallow. In the second year, he's Choresh Vishoneh. Sounds like he plows twice in the second year. Right, so Nira, yes, Nira is you leave it fallow. It's plowing to leave fallow. Choresh is plowing to plant. That'd be the difference in the verb. So over here, it's interesting, which is that the Gemara says, okay, we were looking for an answer as to whether you plow first year and second year. And now you get a braita that says, plow first year, plow twice in the second year. So now, is that really the answer? Does that really help us? And that's what the Gemara says over here. V'la tameich, matitin loktani shoneh. Our Mishnah doesn't have this word shoneh in it. Braita says, katani shoneh, says that you got to repeat it. So even if you were just looking for the one answer, which is first year, second year, in the second year, we have a double plowing. We were only asking about one plowing, now we're talking about two plowings in the second year. So the Braita is even a steerer to the Mishnah in that sense. Because in the Mishnah, you could say that it says to plow the second year, but nowhere does the Mishnah say you plow twice in the second year. That's clearly not the case in our Mishnah. Where it says, hello, Kasha, that steerer between the Braita and our Mishnah, that we can reconcile. Kan, ba'avuda, kan, depends on the nature of this field. Now, Rashi gives, there are two interpretations given here what it means. Hello, Kashi, if you look at Rashi at the top, Matnita dektani neira shena rishona, velo tani vishone, it doesn't say repeat it, var haita avuda, that it was already worked on, vishana rishona. The shana rishona it already was worked, vachshav nochadi gadel yoter. Now it's easy to grow. Bright and tani choresh vishone, a bright that says you plow and plow again, vizara, aino mishum shalo aita, avuda kodum shana rishona. It wasn't worked prior to or shana rishona. Aval matnitin, our mishnah imaita avuda, but in our mishnah we don't know the case if it's avuda lo yadanim choresh vishone vishnia imlo or not. Da lo tani lo choresh velo shone. My havi Allah. Now the Gemara's going to ask, what's the case with this? So that's the basic differential between, or basic difference between these two. The Braita and the Mishnah is the usage of this field. Prior to this time, was the field worked or not worked prior to this time? If it was worked in the past, then it will suffice with a single plowing, our Mishnah. And then if we go again, we'll plow it a second time in the second year, but not three plowings. The Braita is talking about a field which hasn't been used in the past, or hasn't regularly been used, therefore it must be plowed multiple times in order to get ready for the first time it is going to be planted. That'll be the basic difference. And then the Gemara wants to know over here, my Havi Allah, even in our case where it's avuda in our Mishnah, still, what do you do in the second year? And according to this Rashi over here, do you plow twice, once or twice in the second year? Although that seems to be strange because that's just the distinction that we said. So I would have said, and that seems like the Rashi with Tiviyat says more like this, that the second year, do you plow it once? And if you look in the Rashi Ktiviyat down below, he says, Umatniten neira bishnia eno maskir bavuda shenira achat bishana rishona ubraita be'ena avuda shlo nira shana rishona whatsoever. He says that he didn't plow it in the first year year whatsoever. And that's why he requires two in the second year. Our Mishnah is doing a case where he plowed the first year. And then in the second year, we're asking what happened. The Braita is a case where he didn't plow at all the first year. And now he's plowing twice in the second year. The problem with that is that the Braita explicitly says, that it did plow it in the first year. It plowed it and laid it fallow in the first year. So it's not clear what the Rashi Ketuv Yad is saying. And then he says, what's the question over here? Is this a good answer? So the Rashi Ketuv Yad is saying, when the Gemara asks now, is this a good answer? It's asking, is this a distinction that is worthwhile? Whereas the first Rashi is saying, no, that it's saying we gave a difference between the Braita and the Mishnah. Now we want to know, what's the din in the Mishnah? But when he asks, what's the din in the Mishnah, he's almost asking again, well, is it like the Braita or not? So the smoothest way I would read this Gemara is that Avuda and Ein Avuda has to do prior to these 2 years. Avuda and Ein Avuda, was it worked before this field or not worked before this field? Before the first year, were they worked or not? Then, they both agree that you nira the first year. The first year you plow it and leave it fallow. Then in the second year, you plow it, vishonet. Now according to the Braita, that you plow it and shonet because it was never worked before. So therefore you plow, fallow, leave it fallow, plow it, and plow it again in the second year. Our Mishnah says plow the first year. In the second year, it's not going to say plow it twice because it's already avuda. The question is, do you plow at least once in the second year? And that question is still outstanding. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask now. So I think that's, if I combine the two Rashis, that's how I would read this Gemara. I think that's the simplest way to read through it. So Mayavi Allah, Tashma. Gemara says, the Tanya. You have a Braita. Nir chetia vizorea chetia. Nir chetia vizorea chetia. So this is the idea of leaving the fields fallow on alternating years. So you have a field. The first year, you plow and leave fallow one half of it. Vizorea chetia, and you plant the other side. Nir chetia, and the following year, you give over the one that you planted the previous year, you leave it fallow. Plow it and leave it fallow. Vizorea chetia, and you plant the other side. That's the answer. Now, what did the answer say is a good question. Depends how you read it. The way the Rashi reads it, the Rashi of Tarbid says, "V'tifshar mina d'bishinia zora below nira." Sounds like second year you plant it without plowing. Because if you look at the bright, it says nir chetia, you plow half and then you leave it fallow, and the other half it says zoreya. It doesn't have any plowing in that second half. So it sounds like from this bright that you don't have to plow in the year that you plant. You only plow in the year that you're not planting. That would be the conclusion from here. Way Rashi Ketuv Yad reads, I'll read you what he says. It says chetia shana the shana rishana choshak kula. He plows the entire field, zoreya chetia, and then he plants half of it. Umniya chetia nir. V'chein b'shana shniya choresh kula zorei chetia shala v'zera zara eshtekad v'chatzi shzara eshtekad miniach nir b'chol shana zorei nir shal eshtekad. He plants the leftover. So in the beginning, it sounds like from the Rashi and the Ketuv Yad that every year he plows the entire field, leaves half of it fallow, and he plants the other half. So from that, you would have concluded that you plow it twice. But you plow it, but near it, when he says, Pashit de'en nira elopamachat, sounds like that you, God bless you, you only leave it fallow once. But in the second year, you do plow it, you just don't leave it fallow in that year. So the way Rashi learns over here, it sounds like you plow the half, then you plant the half, you plow the half that you planted, and then you plow the other half. You only plow it once every 2 years. Although the Rashi in Ketuv Yad, it sounds like when you say you plow it, you plow the entire field, leave half fallow, plant half. You plow the entire field the next year, you leave the other half fallow, and you plant that half, which means that you would plow every year. Conclusion here is that you only plow once, meaning in the first year and not in the second year at all. Or the Ketuv Yad suggests that you plow it every year, you just don't plow twice in the second year. You only plow once in the second year, and that would also be the conclusion. So the two possibilities of the conclusion from the Braita. Again, like David says, the Pshat and the Braita seems to be that you plow once over the 2 years, and that's the way we would explain our Mishnah as well. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Emi v'imet omer elamina sadot, ha-mudramot shebe Eretz Yisrael. The only ones that are mudramot, again, south, southern fields, whether it means physically in the south of Israel, as Rashi says, because the sun reaches there a lot, or according to Tosafot, which is that they are southern sloping fields, southern facing fields, because Shabana Khamazurachat, Umana Khamashukat. The sun rises and sets along the southern side. Again, we're in the northern hemisphere. So it makes southern exposure, southern facing always gets the sun. So Tanya Namihochi. Abashol Omer Umrayabami Bikat Beit Makleh. Kibat Gimel Saim. It used to produce exactly the amount they needed. Gimel Saim Aita. Besade Mujremet Haita. It was a southern facing or a southern field. The sun rises and sets on that side. Near Chetzia, Bezareah Chetzia, he plows and leaves fallow half of it, plants half of it. And the following year, near Chetzia, the other half, the half that he planted the previous year, he leaves fallow. Bezareah Chetzia, and then he plants the other half. Rav Chilkiya bar Tubi Ayale Karna Dara, he had a little postage stamp of land, a parcel of land. Near Chetzia, Bezareah Chetzia, near Chetzia, Bezareah Chetzia. He did this rotation where he would only plant half the field and plow and leave fallow the other half of the year. V'avada Achatre. It produced double, I guess, with the other fields in the area we're making. And it was such good quality, he was able to sell it for menachot. He followed this instruction of the Mishnah, and he got what you would expect. He got higher quality crops, and he got higher quality solet out of them, and that's why he was able to make a good parnosa out of this small parcel of land.
We always say, you work 6 years, and then you're the best, you should be done. You don't work.
In the Mechilta to Parshat Mishpatim, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, the reasons of Shemitah,
it's only one reason,
to leave the field fallow, like you're saying. But he says over there, that's the bracha. The bracha is that you will only have to leave it once every 7 years fallow, and you won't have to do this, where every other year you leave it fallow. So that's the bracha. The bracha of Shemitah is that it only needs to be left fallow once every 7 years. So I don't know if this is post-Shemitah. I mean, Rav Chilkiya could have been post-Shemitah, but the Mishnah that mentions it was already back in the time of Mikdash, when they still had Shemitah. So then it wouldn't have been so simple, because then they did have Shemitah in that time. All right. Tan Rabbanan. Hitliya psula. If it gets rats, then it's pasul. Tan Rabbanan. Solat shehitliya ruba psula. If rove of it is rotten, then it's no good. V'chitim shehitliyu ruban. Et chitim, you have wheat kernels that became rotten. Then if it's ruban psulot. So by Rabbi Yirmiyah, when we say rov, it means rov chita. Each kernel, rov of it became rotten. Oh, barov sa'ah. Meaning that in the sa'ah worth of, is the rov of the sa'ah rotten. Not that every kernel has a rov in it, but rather the rov of the entire batch here has it rotted. If you look on the side, there's an alternative reading, which is that of the Kesef Mishnah, which is, that's what we said, that one side. The one side is that rove of every chita. And the other side is, every chita is a miut that is rotten. As long as it's the rove of a sa'ah that has a miut of each one that is rotten. So we read it as being either it's rove of every chita, or rove of the entire batch, but not anything about every chita, just rove of the entire batch. The way the Kesef Mishnah is saying is that every chita is always rotten. Just a question if it's a rove of that chita or the miut of that chita. And the tzad would be either rove of every chita or rove of all the chitot, but they are, each chita is only a miut of that chita that is rotten. All right, so those are two ways to read the question. Rabbi Yirmiyah, the Gemara leaves it as a take unanswered. Right, so technically hitliya comes from the word from tola'at, which means that worms are inside of it, infested. Although broadly the Gemara uses and the Mishnah uses it as rotten. It probably is correlated that they are rotten because they are infested. But I don't know if it has to be that there are actually worms in it. We'll see in a second that it seems to be that you can remove the rotten parts of it by wood, we'll see. So it sounds like it's not infested necessarily, but rather rotten. Obviously the two are correlated. When they see, if you believed in spontaneous generation, then you saw rot as the producer of those worms. The worms came, or maggots came out of the rot. So shehitliya was something that produced worms, rather than worms came or infested and made something rotten. So I would assume that there is some sort of connection between them. I'm not positive that over here it really means infested. Alright, so bayi rabbi, gdisha maushila kalehem mishum balmum. What's the din? If you take this rotten wheat or a solet and then you're makdish it, are you chayav because you're makdish a balmum? Came into pasil kebalmum tami, since it's not useful, it cannot be used, it's inappropriate, therefore it's like a balmum. Balmum is a din in behema. It means literally a blemish. That's not what we're talking about. Here we're talking about something that is problematic, but not a blemish. So Gemara leaves that as a teku. It's not atam. We have a similar Mishnah that does a similar thing called H. Shinimtza bo tola'at pasul. Any eats in which there is a worm found, again, a worm or rot found in it, it's pasul agave mizbeach. Amashmo lo shanu el alach. I'm going to tell you about moist wood. About yavesh, if it's dry wood, goruro. Then you scrape it out, vikasher, and it's good. So over here, I'm not sure that, again, it means infested, but rather that it's rotten area, because you could shave down the rotten area. When it's dry wood, you can shave down, you can cut out the area that is rotten. When it's moist wood, you can't get it out because you can't shave down, you can't cut down moist wood. It doesn't shave off well. It only works when you have dry wood. By Rava, Ikdisho, Maushi Lekele Hemishum Bomo, Rava queries, again, asks the same question. What's the din of this wood if you bring it and you makdish it with this rod in it? Came the basul ke balmum dummy. Since it's inappropriate, unusable, it's like a balmum. Odilma gain balmum, ela behema. Again, blemish only applies to animals. Teku, again, we leave it as a teku. Similar question by wood as he has by solet and chita. Okay, Mishnah, tkoa, alpha the shemen. So we've discussed before is the tbua, the wheat that you use for the solet. Now we're discussing the shemen that is brought. And tekoa is alpha, alpha meaning aleph, A, grade A for shemen. Again, if you go today to modern day tekoa, out past the frat to tekoa, they have big signs that say that they're alpha the shemen. They use this mishnah to advertise their shemen of tekoa. They have, obviously, they have plenty of olive trees in the area, but they advertise, when you go there to get shemen zayit, if you go around Hanukkah time, they're always advertising alpha the shemen. It's the best place to buy your shemen from. So the mishnah says, tekoa alpha the shemen, abashol omer, shniyala regev, be'evra yadein. The second, after you get the tekoa, grade B, comes from Regev and Eivra Yardain. Now, Kol Ha'atzarot Kishayuk Sherot, HaMikana Yumevin. Everywhere is fine, except this is where they used to bring from. Now, Rashi, if you remember, the previous mission said Kol Ha'atzarot was Galil Yehuda and Eivra Yardain. So over there, we noted that Eivra Yardain is not so clear, because only Abba Shaul is the one who says that Eivra Yardain is okay. It's not clear that the Tanakhama would have accepted Eivra Yardain. It's explained that it's Eivra Yardain in the previous mission, that is not clear. Over here, Kol Ha'atzarot also might be all right, so literally, because you may not have the issue of Mimosh Votechem, which is you may not have the requirement that it be brought Mimosh Votechem from Eretz Yisrael itself. It also might be okay to bring it from Chutz La'aretz when it comes to Zaitim, when it comes to the Shemen. The Mishnah goes, Emivin, again, which fields can you use? Lomi Beit HaZvalim, not from fertilized fields. Lomi Beit HaShlachim, not watered irrigated fields. Below, Mimash Nizra Binehem. That this is equivalent to what would have been a stei ilan. It would be the case of a stei ilan where stei ilan by tevua means that you have a field of grain that has trees planted in it. So here's the opposite. You have olive trees planted and they plant grain in between the trees. So it's not from a field that is nizra. This is the opposite of beit ilan. Over here it would be beit tevua, that the tevua is machish the zeitim on the trees. V may be kasher. Again, if you bring from these types of fields, it's subpar, it's not the mufchar, but it works. Emevin anfiktan or anfiknun, depending on what the girsa is here. Vimfi kasher. If you bring from that, it is kasher. The Gemara will discuss what this anfiktun is. We'll get back to it in the Gemara, but there is also controversy whether imevi kasher or imevi pasul, like the latter half of the Mishnah. Emevin min agargirim shinishru b'mayim, velo min akvashim, velo min ashalukim, imevi pasul. You can't bring from olives that fell off and then were soaking in water, that were either pickled, kvashim, or they were shalukim, they were cooked. None of those work. If you have to cook them or do any of these processes to get the oil out of them, then they're no good. And if you bring from there, they are pasul. That's one way to read it, which is that there are three different issues here, which is that there's gargarim that weren't in water, kvashim, and shalukim. Those are the three different things. The other way to read it is that emevin gargarim, that's the cloud, that's the general statement. And then, no matter what you do to these gargarim, whether nishru b'mayim, kvashim, or shalukim, that everything is modifying the gargarim, which is any gargar that you bring, that you have to, either you soak it in water, or you kovesh it, or you shalake it, none of those are good. So the first way to read it is that the gargarim is only being modified by the nishru b'mayim. The rest, the kvashim and shalukim, is period, it's no good. Whereas the second way to read it is that gargarim are being modified by all three of these statements, that don't do any of these three in order to take these gargarim and make them useful for oil. Then, vayishlach Yoav tekoa, Yoav sent out the tekoa, vayikach misham isha chokhma. And he got a smart woman from there to help him out to deal with Avshalom. Maishna tekoa. Why did he call a woman from tekoa in order to help him? Since they have really good olive oil, and the regular olive oil is something that makes a person smart. That Shemen Zayit, as Rashi writes, the Rashi Ktivyad, Mifakeach et Alev, makes someone smart. I don't know if that means emotionally intelligent, but it helps them out. It's a good thing. So Tan Rabbanan, B'tovel B'Shemen Raglo, That's the bracha of Asher, that it'll be, his feet will be covered in oil. Zechel koshel Asher, shmokshech shemen kimayan, that has oil coming out of it like a spring. Amru, even though Tekoa is really in the area of Yehuda, not in the area of Asher. Pamachat nitzruchu lehem anche ludkia, b'shemen, they needed, in the place Ludkia, probably somewhere down in Africa, they needed a lot of oil. Minu lehem pomustus, they appointed a shaliach, an agent, to go out and get it for them. Again, Rashi mentions a non-Jewish agent. Achad amru lo, lech v'aveh lanu shemen b'mea ribo. Go ahead and bring us shemen b'mea ribo. Sounds like from here, I'm assuming it means, mea ribo is a million, means the cost of it, mea ribo maneh, that's what Rashi claims. Although you could have said it was the measurement, the volume of shemen that they want. Halach l'Yerushalayim, amru lo, they went to Yerushalayim to get oil. Amru lo, lech l'tzur. Go to Tzur. So you would have thought, which would make some sense here in this story, is Yerushalayim is the capital city of Yehuda. Tzur is the Phoenician capital up north. So he's sending them to the capital city. Tzur is famous for a lot of things, including its minting of coins. Tosus over here says the Tzur that we're talking about here is not Tyre. It's not Tyre up north, but rather another Tzur that was in Eretz Yisrael. So they send to another city within Eretz Yisrael. Halach the Tzur, amru lo, lech the Gush Chalav. Go to the place called Gush Chalav, which is in the possession of Asher. Halach the Gush Chalav, amru lo, lech etzel ploni, the Sadalaz. Go to so-and-so and go to his field. Matzo sheya ozek tachet zeitav. Found him that under his zeitim he was being ozek. Now, two possibilities of what ozek means over here. Either Rashi says that he was raking. He was raking under, making circular rakings under his olive trees. Tosus over here says, Yesh mefarshim osek geder. He's making fences around his zeitim. And then he rejects that explanation. Veloy tachen, he says that's not right. But rather, he says that it means to rake around. The reason that he's in there arguing about it is because there's a Tosus yesterday, which we discussed, on the idea of being shomer your field. Guarding your field on Shvi'it, the word ozek comes up there. And the definition of ozek is a machloket. So ozek mean to just work the area under the zeitim, or does it mean to put a fence around? So those that say it's a fence around are because they're learning that someone who's shomer their perot and shvi'it is problematic. Alright, so Tosus rejects that over here and goes like Rashi's pshat. Amar lo, yesh lecha shemen b'mea ribo? Do you have shemen for a million? Maneh? Shani tzarich, that's what I need. Amar lo, himtein li ad sheyaseyem melachti. Wait till I finish my work. Himtein ad sheyaseyem melachto, he waited there. Ad sheyaseyem melachto, yivshil kelav l'achurav, threw his clothes behind him, and he lifted them up because he didn't want to get them ripped like a poor person would do, so he doesn't lose his clothes, they don't get ruined. And then he was taking the rocks out. Misakel means to remove rocks from the field. So it's exactly what he was doing over here. He was removing rocks from the field or underneath his zeitim as he went home. Again, on the way, he's asking him, do you have this? The Jews are making fun of me. They sent to me this poor guy here, and I'm going to come and I'm looking for large quantities of oil. When he got there, his maidservant came out, so he's not such a poor guy, and gave him a kettle full of hot water. He washed his hands and his feet. They brought out for him a large pitcher full of shemen. And then he dipped his hands and his feet in it. That's to keep the, what the pasuk says, that they have so much oil that they dip their feet in it. After they ate and drank, he got out his shemen, he sold him shemen for a million. Maybe you need more. Hey, he says, we do need more. I don't have any more money. You'll take it, and I'll accompany you, and then I'll get my money when you get back to Ludkia. So he went ahead and he measured out another, either again, 180,000. I don't know if 180,000 was the measurement of the oil or the amount of value that he measured out to him. This man, to transport the oil back, didn't leave a single horse, donkey, camel, or mule in Eretz Yisrael that was not Shlo Sachro, that he did not hire. They came out to praise him. Amar lehem, lo li lekal sini. Don't praise me, lo lezeh. Shabayim me. This guy who took care of us. Shemad dadli shemen b'mea ribo. Give me the million maneh shemen. Varei no shebi. Shnasa ribo. And he still has another, I owe him another 180,000. Because he gave me more. Lekayim meshen emar. Yesh mit asher vein kol. There's someone who gives the appearance of being rich and has nothing. Mitro sheish. Someone has the appearance of being poor. Vahon rav. And he really is very wealthy. And that's the story here, where he acted like a poor person, that he did. He worked his fields, he did all the basics, but he was very wealthy, meaning that he was able to provide him with the oil that he needed. Okay, we'll stop over here.